Okay.
Okay.
Friday morning,
we're finishing the first set of sheets that I sent you. Perek Aleph, Mishnah Tet is now. And then we're going to Perek Bet, which I just sent you front and back. So don't get confused on the Perek Aleph, Perek Bet. And definitely don't know if they're papers.
Perek Aleph, Mishnah Tet, the last Mishnah of the first chapter. Mi shera'a et ha'chodesh ve'eno yachol lehalech. Someone who saw the new moon and wants to testify in court, but he has difficulty walking. He's not able to get there, right? Molichim oto ala hamor afilu bemita. We're allowed to take him on a donkey and even on a bed, and we can carry him there, even if it's Shabbat. Again, we're talking about continuing the discussion about violating Shabbat in order to get to Beit Din to testify. We're allowed to violate Shabbat for this guy to get him there so that he could testify. If there are people along the path who are maybe ambushing him, it might not be safe. They take with them sticks to be able to beat them away. In those times, the rabbis talked about kol ha'derachim b'chizkat sakana. All of the paths, the highways and the roads, were always in a status of danger, either from wild animals, mm-hmm. but more likely from bandits, robbers. They didn't have like the kind of system that we have today. And it was a constant threat. There was a constant threat that people would come to ambush them, to take them, and whatnot. So they had to be careful. So they were even allowed to take sticks with them to ward off any potential threats. V'im hayta derech rechoka, if let's say it was a very far way, lokhim biyadam mezonot, they were even allowed to take with them food. Carry with them food. This is all on Shabbat in order to be able to get
there. Same concept with the sticks. It's carrying.
Yeah, it's concept is carrying. But to what extent? Look, they're not telling him, okay, you're too far, you have to take food, don't go.
That's the oraita, right?
Yeah, carrying. All of these things are waived in order to be able to go testify.
Why do we need the first part? We know the first part already.
Which one?
That if a guy can't walk, you got to take him.
Because now we're allowing even other people to do Chilul Shabbat for him. It's not even the guy himself who's testifying. Other people are violating Shabbat on his behalf.
Right.
Is even allowed. And that's to what extent it's going. Right? So here's the first time we see a cap by the Hachamim. On a day, on a walk, a distance of one night and day, if a person lives one day's journey from the Beit HaMikdash to be able to testify, so then he's allowed to break Shabbat. Now this is logical. If a person lives more than a day away, even breaking Shabbat is not going to help him, because by the time he's going to break Shabbat, by the time he gets there, it's already going to be the next day. He's not going to be there in time to be able to testify anyway. In other words, when's the person testifying? It's day 29. He wants to testify that day 30, which is the limbo day, could be 30, could be 1. He wants to testify that day 30 should really be Rosh Chodesh. If he lives more than a day away,
he can't do it.
By the time he gets there day 30 will already have been finished. He's going to get there on day 1 anyway. They can't retroactively make it day 2. So it's not going to make a difference for him anyway. So then if he lives more than a day away, there's no point in violating Shabbat, because his testimony is not going to have anything to do.
Violating Shabbat.
Right. Right? She'al mahalach lala v'yom mehalelin et ha-shabbat v'yotzim le'edut ha-chodesh. On a day's journey, on a night and day's journey, you're allowed to violate Shabbat, and you're allowed to go out to testify.
As long as he knows he's going to get there in
right.
time.
Now, the pasuk ends here with something that we've been wondering for a while, is what is the source from the Torah that allows somebody to violate Shabbat on behalf of Kiddush HaChodesh? And so they tell us at the very end, Shene'emar, as the pasuk says, Ele Mo'adei Hashem, these are the times, the holidays of Hashem, Asher Tikre'u Otam B'Mo'adam, that you shall call them in their time. Now the word Mo'adam here is the key word. You must call them in their time. Anytime the word Mo'ed or Mo'adam or Mo'ado is used, it is always used in the context of it has to be at that time, even if it means overriding Shabbat. I'll give you an example. We read every single day, right? The Korban Tamid, the daily sacrifice, right? Tzavet b'nei Yisrael ve'amarta alehim et korbani lachmi le'ishai, my korban ishai, reyach nichohi tishmeru, guard it, lehakriv li, to give to me, be'mo'ado. The next word is be'mo'ado, in its time. What do the rabbis learn from the word be'mo'ado? That the korban overrides Shabbat, even though slaughtering is asur on Shabbat, There's a whole host of things that are allowed.
They did the Korban on Shabbat.
They did the Korban. How do they know they're allowed to do the Korban on Shabbat? Because the word, because the Pasuk says, Bemo'ado. It has to be in its time.
It wouldn't say Bemo'ado.
Exactly. That word.
Bemo'ado is telling you, no matter what. No matter what.
Exactly. Right. And so that's why they're learning the same word over here. You have to call Rosh Chodesh Bemo'adam. You have to set the holidays Bemo'adam. The word Bemo'adam is telling us that even if it means violating Shabbat, you still have to call the Chodesh and you still have to do it that way. That's what they learn. So this is the precedent. This is where it comes from. That's why I said you have to have something in the Torah that teaches you that you're allowed to do that. We don't just say, well, we need it for the greater good so we can violate Shabbat. It has to be something from the Torah. Not because you can do Korban
at the time.
I'm just illustrating the word
Bemo'adam. They would never say Bemo'adam.
Exactly.
They didn't mean
that's the key word. Right. In its time. Anytime it says Bemo'adam in its time, no matter what, it pushes everything off.
Don't think you can push it off.
Exactly.
Even Shabbat.
Exactly.
I guess it's
there. I was using the Korban to illustrate you another example where the word Bemo'ado tells you that it even pushes off Shabbat.
I guess it's there for Shabbat specifically.
Yeah, 100%.
Because you would think I can't violate Shabbat.
Right, exactly.
Bemo'ado is
a little bit of a tangent, but like we just finished, I did an Edim Zom Emim. What would happen if the guy, for whatever reason, was trying to cause issue? He said, oh, I saw the moon last night. Right. And he was lying. What was his? And he was found that he was. What would his punishment be? Because you can't get what you got.
It's a good question. I'm not sure.
What would you get? You can't.
You might maybe give him malchut. I don't know. In that case, you might just give him malchut. But I don't know.
You mean he violated Shabbat?
No.
He lied. The person lies. If they find out that he lies about it,
so it's false witness. But you.
So
can't
a lot of times, a lot of times
get.
It's hard though. A lot of times it's hard because the person will just say, "Oh, I didn't. I saw the wrong thing, or something, whatever it is. You don't know exactly. No." In other words, that people made a lot of times people made mistakes regarding the
so I guess it was something. Yeah. But then again, it's that much easier to lie about it.
True, but it does not have. It's not so much between you. It's not a kind of case where you're doing something to anybody else. That's really the.
Eight was saying? Chet?
No, eight was talking about people who are forbidden to testify. In general, and in the case of Rosh Chodesh as well, also. Okay, so we move into chapter 2, Mishnah Aleph. More about the acceptance of the witnesses for sanctifying the new month. Mishnah Aleph. Im en makirin oto, if let's say the Bet Din do not recognize this person, they don't know from him. They don't know his credentials, what kind of person he is. Is he honest? Is he reputable? They don't know anything about him. He's a stranger. Mm-hmm. So you got to send a reference guy. They would also let another person go with him to be able to say, to vouch for the guy, to say, no, I know he's a reputable guy. You can accept him. His testimony is good.
We learned yesterday that you can't be
a gambler.
All the different people who are not, anybody's over avera, something like that.
You
so we don't know.
Yourself, you have to have two.
You have to have two witnesses, but you could go by yourself because you can link up with somebody else. Right. Even if you're alone, you can maybe another person.
It's not like killing
them.
Someone when you have to have two present at that time. No. They just have to vouch for you that you're a reputable person.
That's all he needs to do. He has to just vouch for his reputation, that he's somebody who could be a credible witness. Right? Mishalehin aher imo lehaido. And it's mashma that he would even be allowed to send this guy on Shabbat again. Right? Even on Shabbat, even if it means the other guy who's helping him, if he needed it on Shabbat, he would be allowed to send it on Shabbat as well. Now the Mishnah tells us that problems started to occur with Kiddush HaChodesh. Barishona, in the beginning, Hayu mekabelim edut HaChodesh mikol adam. They used to accept testimony on the new month from any person. As long as he had a reputable source, as long as someone vouched for him, then they would accept it from anybody. Mishekilkelu haminim. Once the heretics started to cause problems for the Jews, Hitkinu shelo yehu mekabelim ela min hamakirim. They established, the rabbi said, that they're only going to accept testimony from people who the Beit Din recognizes. In other words, they would create a registration list, so to speak, of people who the Beit Din knew and could guarantee were reputable. And they only accepted testimony from those people. They wouldn't accept it from them. Right. Well, why would the heretics lie? So there was a group during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash called the Tzedukim. And the Tzedukim, they didn't like the Torah Shebaal Peh. They wanted to undermine the authorities and the systems of the Perushim, of the rabbis, of the Orthodox rabbis at that time. Right? And so they caused a lot of problems over here. So the Minim over here, what did they do? They started sending fake witnesses to the Beit HaMikdash to testify so that they would mess up the calendar for the rest of the people. Right? And so once the rabbis caught wind of this, they decided we're only going to accept from certain people who we can vouch for, who we know 100%, because you couldn't always know who's a heretic, who's not. So they were able to have certain tests and certain people who they were comfortable with, and that's who was allowed to testify. And if it was somebody came who wasn't reputable, even with another person vouching for him, unless it was someone who was reputable vouching for him, they wouldn't accept it. They couldn't do it.
Right. How long did this whole process go on for?
What process?
The process of witnesses coming to testify. They saw something.
As long as they had a Beit HaMikdash, as long as they had a Beit HaMikdash, as long as they had a Sanhedrin, even post second Beit HaMikdash, when they had a Sanhedrin in Yavne, there was a Kiddush HaChodesh. It wasn't until after that that they knew that it was going to go away that they established a set calendar. Mm-hmm. So off of that, we'll do one more. We'll do maybe one or two more Mishnayot because we have it's only 8:13, and these Mishnayot go quick. So off of that, the Mishnah just taught us one thing that the heretics did to kind of undermine the system of Kiddush HaChodesh. The next Mishnah gives us a second thing that they did, not the heretics, but another group called the Kutim, who were like a thorn in the side of the rabbis, like fake Jews,
not sure if they
who also tried to nice. Do things to hit to the calendar. Mishnah Bet is a famous Mishnah. Barishona, in the beginning, hayu masi'in masu'ot. How did they get the message out to the people outside of Eretz Yisrael that they had in fact sanctified the month and how to organize the calendar? Right. They would light torches from mountaintop to mountaintop, and we're going to see in a minute what the process was for that. And that's how they would get the signal out. What did these kutim? So at that point, Mishakil Kiluha Kutim, there was a group of people called the Kutim who lived in Samaria towards the northern part of Israel, and they didn't like the rabbis. They weren't happy with them. They were sketch Jews, kind of. They pretended to be, but the rabbis didn't accept their authority. They built their own Beit HaMikdash. At certain points, they wanted themselves to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Terrible fights and back and forth between them. So they often tried to do things to hurt the systems of the rabbis. And so what did they do? They said, okay, great, we'll light the torches on a day that it's not Rosh Chodesh, they'll send out the signal and the whole Jewish world is going to get the wrong day of Rosh Chodesh. So Mishakilkelu HaKutim, once the Kutim started to cause a problem to the system, Hitkinu, the rabbis established, Shehu Shluhim Yotzim, that they're going to send out messengers. They could only trust people to actively go and do word of mouth from person to person to be able to do it. And they obviously, people knew who the reputable messengers were. So if the Kuti sent a person to go tell them, they wouldn't accept it because they didn't have all of the needs to show that, to identify themselves as messengers of the Beit Din. Now what happened as a result of that is the process slowed down significantly. The torch thing was able to get people the message very, very quickly, right? That could travel, you know, very, very fast.
Right.
You know, maybe even in a day or two, everybody could know that it was Rosh Chodesh. Once you have to send out messengers by foot to every single place, or by horse to every single place, that took much longer. And that dramatically slowed down the process, which is why more and more places outside of the land of Israel were not getting the message of Rosh Chodesh early enough in the month. And that's why they started to develop the custom of celebrating 2 days of Yom Tov, because there were certain places that even the messengers didn't reach in time within 15 days, within 2 weeks of getting there, they weren't able to reach it. Okay. So that's another example, another illustration of how certain groups within the Am Yisrael or within the area of land of Israel tried to do things to attack or undermine the system of Kiddush HaChodesh. In general, it's worthy to mention of a word. We had this by Chanukah also, that non-Jews and anybody who tried to attack the Jewish people or hurt the Jews religiously, the calendar was one of the first things that they tried to attack. We know the Greeks attacked the calendar. They didn't allow them to sanctify the new month because everything is built on that. All of the times, all of the holidays, all of the key events in Judaism go based on the calendar.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And without that, we're kind of lost, right? And so much of that depends on the calendar and establishing of Rosh Chodesh, whether it be the Korbanot, whether it be the holidays. And so without it, we're sort of lost. And so that's why that was one of the things that was often under attack constantly by outside enemies. The last Mishnah we'll do today is the third Mishnah over here. Mishnah Gimel tells us, maybe we could even do Dalet, we'll see, the process by which they would light the fires on the mountaintops to be able to get the message out. Ketzad hayu masi'in masu'ot. How was the process? How did it go that they lit the fires and passed it on by torch? Mevi'im klun tsa'ot shel eres. They would bring long sticks of cedar wood, arukim, that were long. v'kanim and branches, v'atze shemen and olive trees, right, olive branches, u'ne'oret shel pishtan, pieces of flax, right, plant of flax. All of these things are very flammable. Mm-hmm. They would tie them together, v'korech b'mshiha, they would tie all of these things together with a string or a rope. Ve'ole l'rosh ha'har, they would go onto the top of the high mountains. U'metzit b'hen et'ur, and they would light these things on fire. And so you can imagine olive wood, olive tree wood, together with cotton and flax, and was very flammable. It lit a very, very bright light. And they went onto the tops. U'molich, u'mevi, u'ma'ale, u'morid, and they would wave the sticks in all directions, up and down, back and forth, up and down, back and forth.
If a guy came Saturday morning,
yeah.
They're lighting this up Saturday
afternoon? Well, that's a good question. Probably not, because this whole idea was to get the message out to the people outside of Eretz Yisrael. And that message would not be required to be received at that time. We would just want to make sure that they receive the message in time for future months and things like that, for future weeks, future days, I should say. So it's not clear. I'll have to look into it again. I don't believe that they did this on Rosh Chodesh, on Shabbat. This was something that was done afterwards to get the message out to Chutz La'aretz. But anyways, by that time, most of the people in Chutz La'aretz were celebrating 2 days of Rosh Chodesh out of Safek, because they weren't sure, because the message couldn't even get out with the fire so much.
And today we do that also, right, with the 2 days, because we didn't know. What do we do 2 days now every Rosh Chodesh?
Some days we don't. We do some days. Well, it depends on how the month. Right. We would do 2 days because of the doubt. Because day 30 is Rosh Chodesh, because they were never sure. Day 30 is always going to be Rosh Chodesh. Right. Think about it like that. Mm-hmm. Right. Day 30 is always Rosh Chodesh because it's either day one of the next month. Right.
What's the reason now that we do either 2 or 1 day?
What?
Why does sometimes now? Today's day and age.
I'm telling you, because day 30 is always going to be observed as Rosh Chodesh, because either day 30 is really day 1 mm-hmm. of the next month, or if it's not, if it's day 30 of the previous month, the people wouldn't know that it was day 30 of the previous month, because all that day, witnesses could come at any time. So they observed it as Rosh Chodesh, and then if they found out that nobody came, then they would observe the next day as Rosh Chodesh. And if they found that they did, so then they knew that it was that day was Rosh Chodesh, the next day was Bet. But most of the time, the message didn't get to them in time anyway, right? So maybe they did it through calculations or things like that. Most of the time, the holiday, the months go alternating, full none, haser male. That's the way it works. So I don't believe this was done on Shabbat. So they would get up to the mountaintop. They would wave the sticks of fire up and down and back side to side. Ad shehu ro'eh et havero shehu osekin b'rosh ha'har ha'sheni, until he sees that his friend on the next designated mountain is copying what he's doing, and then he realized the message spread to him, and then that continues, and there's a chain reaction. V'chen b'rosh ha'har ha'shlishi, and so too on the third mountain, and so it traveled from mountain to mountain until it reached all of the outskirts of the outside of the land of Israel. And so this is the process. We're familiar with this. We probably heard this many, many times before. But this is the original way of doing it. Of course, as we said before, once the Kutim undermined that system, they switched to a messenger system. We'll read one more Mishnah. Do we have time? 8:21.
Yeah, let's. I could do one more.
Okay. This is just easy. It's just telling you the places that they went from one to one. So Mishnah Dalet tells us, "Ume'ayin hayu masi'in masu'ot." From what places, what were the mekomot, the places that they lit the fire? So one was from Hara Mishha le Sarteba. From one mountain was called Hara Mishha, the other one was called Sarteba. Umi Sarteba li Gripina. I'll bring you a map next time to show you how it goes. I should have brought it this time, but I didn't think we would get here. Right, so from Hara Mishha to Sarteba, from Sarteba li Gripina, mi Gripina le Havran, mi Havran le Bet Biltin. All of these are different names of places, different mountaintops and areas where they went. These were critical, they were strategically chosen places where they knew Jews were there and where it was able to be seen and they would be spread pretty quickly. Umi Bet Biltin lo zazu misham. From Bet Biltin, they didn't move from there. Ela molich umeale umorid ad shehaya ro'e kol agola lefanav kimdurat esh. There was a place, this Bet Biltin was apparently on a very high level and was somewhat central, that they were able to do it there, and multiple places surrounding it would be able to.
All these places in Israel?
Figure it out. Huh? Some of these places are in Israel, and then they creep out to outside of Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Right, so what does it mean over here? Umi bet biltin lo zazu misham. They did not move from Bet Biltin, right? It says Rabbi Obadiah, ha'edim sheyatzu chutz l'tchomam b'shabbat ubahu le'aid, shehayotze b'chutz l'tchom eno ela arba'amot. Oh, sorry, no, that's... No, that's the next Mishnah. I apologize. Right? Lo Zazu Mishnah means that when they did it on Bet Biltin, it was so centrally located and so high that multiple places surrounding were able to see it. And from there, the whole exile lit up, basically, they said. That became the central place that from there, everybody else was able to find out. So the Mishnah over here in Dalet illustrates to us the chain.
Huh? Is it still the same name today?
I don't know. Right, the Mishnah here illustrates us the chain of fires from mountaintop to mountaintop until they reached the place of Bet Biltin, which from there everybody was able to see it. And it says, Ad she'haya ro'e kol ha'gola, they saw the entire exile, lefanav kimdurat esh, like a big bonfire. So basically, you can imagine all the lands lighting up as a result of having received the message that it's going to be Rosh Chodesh. So this concludes our discussion about the process, the original process of how they got the message of Rosh Chodesh out to the different places. The Mishnah details it at length from the different places. Maybe next time I'll show you a little map and we'll send a picture to Zolta so you can see the different places that it went, because there are some places that are missing in the interim. The Mishnah kind of cut it down. There were a few other steps in between that were also added. The Mishnah just doesn't mention them. But ultimately, this was the system that they did until the Kutim undermined it and they switched to the Shlichim. The rest of the next few Mishnayot are going to continue talking about the process of sanctifying the new month and what did they need to see, what did the witnesses have to testify about, what was a good testimony, what was not. We're going to get into that in even more detail. Baruch Adonai Le'olam, amen v'amen, Shabbat Shalom.